Allez, là, dans le coup, on s'en croise, et qui vous en sens, mais je veux me tirer, et je vais 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 me tirer,
Good evening. So I want to say hello, as I do every week, but also I've just returned from some time in Adelaide in South Australia, where we where there was a gathering of a number of students for a Guru Bumsuk, or to make 100,000 offerings to Guru Rinpoche. So we came together, as we were to do each year, to engage in these offerings so as to accumulate a merit which is dedicated to the Lama life of His Holiness, as well as Lama Zopa, that these great Lamas may continue to abide in our world and continue to benefit limitless sentient beings. And in addition, the prayers this time were especially dedicated to all the suffering that is being experienced in the bushfires in Australia, to both those beings who have died an awful death, as well as those who are suffering in other ways, such as through the destruction of their homes and their habitat. We also gathered to make prayers for world peace, as well as the accomplishment of inner peace. And there was a large group that were able to come together this year. There were 6 geshis, about 30 ordained people, and maybe as many as a couple of 100 non-ordained people. So we had really a very beneficial few days together, and now it's good to be back here in my home with all of you. And spending time with other yeshis, we had a lot of, well, we won't say discussion, but it really was debate. And then we also did some debate performance. So we debated in front of the students for spaciousness. And so we did this a couple of times. And this is also something that brings great joy to our mind, the analysis of the Buddha Dharma.
So then that
gave the opportunity for all those around us to directly see the debate that we've trained in for so many years, and so they could then gain some experience of this effective way of study. We're continuing now to look at this presentation on the impermanence of life. Our time apart was impermanent, we are now together. My time in Adelaide was impermanent, we are now together. And we continue to look at our text. So last week we also spoke about the motivation that a practitioner who aspires for the Mahayana needs to cultivate whilst reflecting on the impermanence of life or death and impermanence. And that motivation is with an awareness that the most effective way to be of great benefit to others is to become a Buddha. And therefore I must strive to become a Buddha for the sake of others. And in order to achieve this exalted goal, I need a suitable basis to spiritually develop. And the most suitable basis is this, of this precious human rebirth like we have now. But this life, this human rebirth, is impermanent. It will end. And we need to ensure that when the time of death comes, that we've accumulated the causes that will lead to another good rebirth. And therefore, one generates with this understanding of impermanence, the impermanence of this opportunity, the impermanence of this life, one develops the clear understanding that one has to apply oneself to accumulation of virtue and ensure that one doesn't accumulate non-virtue, which are the causes for rebirth in the lower realms. And it's through the further accumulation of virtue that one continues to achieve good rebirths and thereby can progress to the attainment of enlightenment for the sake of others. In the middle of page 19, in the middle of the middle paragraph, at this moment you are content to eat, drink and consume, yet life, wealth and sensual objects and food just burn on, and you accomplish nothing of value. Where we concluded last week was we had reminded ourselves that this presentation that we're in now follows the previous section, which was the recognition of what we have attained, this precious human rebirth, this life of such great potential. And in that presentation we spoke about how very rare it is to have this opportunity, and that, and it's so rare we could see through how few beings have this, and that is because of how difficult it was to accumulate the required causes. So that presentation led to, through having done those reflections repeatedly, one will have now given rise to a sense of valuing this life that we've achieved in a sense of a clear understanding of the potential that can be achieved. Now we come to this topic, which reflects that this life of great meaning, this life of great potential, is impermanent. It can end, and it will end, and it can end at any time. And therefore, it's imperative that we do apply ourselves to living a life of great meaning, and turn away from having a mental attitude that is dominated by the accomplishment of mere mundane worldly activities. So all these thoughts and activities that occupy us so in terms of acquiring comfort and possessions, as well as our friendships and relationships, all of this, if that is all that dominates our life, we're going to not have the opportunity to engage in the accumulation of virtue and the abandonment of non-virtue. And then when the time of death comes, all that we've spent our life accumulating, whether friendships or relationships and possessions, it's going to be of no help to us then. And moreover, the negativities that we would have engaged in the cultivation of these relationships and the accumulation of our possessions, our resources, thereby we would have accumulated a lot of non-virtue. And that is what we will take into our next lives. So therefore, we need to apply ourselves to virtue in this life. We need to apply ourselves to living a life of meaning. So repeating now what we looked at last week was to set the context on what we've just read, because we're in the middle of the page, in the middle of a paragraph. So that brings the context back to mind. Now we take what has been read here. At this moment you are content to eat, drink and consume, yet life, wealth and sensual objects and food just burn on and you accomplish nothing of value. So here what has been called to mind is we reflect on our life, how we have lived thus far, in particular our mental engagements thus far, what has consumed our mental activities thus far. So for all of us, many years have passed of this precious life already. The time since our birth to now, whilst varying, is quite some years. So a large portion of our human rebirth that is so precious has already been passed. And so much of our time in the sense of our mental activity has been consumed by thoughts and concerns about the achievement of mere worldly comfort, mere worldly pleasures, worldly joy. If we think of the vast number of meals that we have eaten over our life thus far, from when we were young and we were provided by our parents, up to when we were in our youth and now in our current age, most of these meals we have no recollection of whether they were delicious or whether they're just ordinary, long forgotten. Some were particularly wonderful, and we perhaps put a lot of time and energy into the planning and the preparation and for them, but that too is past, it's forgotten. And similarly, in terms of other forms of entertainment, we've talked about eating and drinking, so we would have consumed a vast array of different things, and that would have brought us some pleasure, and the striving or seeking for such pleasure is largely what has consumed a lot of our time and our energy. And so too, in terms of our relationships with others, with our family and our loved ones, this has consumed a lot of our time and our energy. And this now Well, all that's come, that we has gone, is past and is largely forgotten. And so what is being referred to here is primarily the mental attitude or the way of thinking, where the mind is dominated by achieving this mere life's happiness and comfort, a mind that is very narrow in its perspective and its outlook. And that is what we're being reminded of here, how much time has been lost through this way of thinking. And this really is the way that beings live throughout the world, striving for happiness, striving for comfort. The mind obsessed about overcoming ordinary frustrations and achieving fleeting happiness. The beings throughout the world strive just for mere worldly joys and happiness, the pleasures of samsara. And this really is the way that lives are lived. This is not the fulfillment of a life of great meaning, but rather the way we think tends to be dominated by accumulating resources that just bring very temporary comforts, cultivating relationships and connections with our family and others. And in this way, with a mind focused just on the here and now, our life has been consumed, and so little of great meaning has been achieved. So here, what the text is directing our attention towards is to reflect on how we have spent our time thus far, how our mental energy has been focused, how our mental energy has been focused, what we've been striving to achieve. And this is done to try and develop a very clear awareness of our uncontrived, unnatural way of thinking, the way we naturally uncontrived way in which we think.
That is, 다
An effective way, perhaps, to think about this is to first put our attention to turn our attention towards what we observe in the world, and what we observe from our perspective, how we see most people live their lives. We see that the way people's way of thinking is dominated by their work activities. Not just while they're at work, but often at home they're thinking about work. Their mental strength is not consumed by work, largely then goes to their family, to their loved ones, thinking about getting their kids into the right schools, getting them through schooling, ensuring they have a good education and a well-rounded education. So all these kinds of thoughts, as well as then thirdly, thoughts to do with possessions and possessions, and how to have newer, nicer, better, and more. And then fourthly, a fourth area that consumes people's time then would be on relaxing, on trying to find some peace from this busyness. And so here, in this way, we can observe through people that we know and what we see generally in the world, that these areas, people's employment, their work, their family and friends and loved ones, as well as their material resources, and then entertainment, this tends to consume people's mental energy in its entirety, leaving no time to think about the Dharma, no time to think about how to live a life of meaning, or whether a life of meaning is even being lived. So that can be a starting point in one's reflection. The imperative second step then, if one does start in this way, is then to look at oneself and take these lessons that one observes outside and see that they apply to us. Some maybe not as much, but others maybe more so, but they all apply to us. We need to look at our lives. Look at our lives and see how our time and our energy has been consumed by activities which are merely geared to this life's comfort, this life's pleasure. And a key result to come to here is this a feeling of disenchantment as a life of consumption, and consumption in a broad sense, consumption of one's time and mental energy being consumed by something that doesn't lead to a goal of great meaning. And that is the kind of outcome to come to, a sense of disenchantment at a life spent in consumption. reflection then can start with taking what we observe in others and then progressing to the second step of looking at how it applies to oneself and looking with sincerity and honesty. And then thirdly, we remind ourselves that this way of thinking, this way of thinking where one is primarily concerned by worldly happiness, the achievements of worldly happiness and overcoming of mundane problems, this is a way of thinking that we have brought into this life from past lives. In other words, this is how we've been acting from life to life to life, dominated just by the concerns of this life. And it is therefore, so going through those three steps, we will come to see that this is the reason that we remain bound in this prison of samsara. This way of thinking is why we have not attained our longed for freedom from the sufferings of samsara. Here we're trying to bring ourselves to have an appreciation for this vast amount of time that has passed pursuing things that have no lasting value, no great benefit. And this should give us a sense of disenchantment, a sense of fatigue for having continued around and around again in samsara. And that then takes us to the next line in the text. This brings us to the result that one fully directs whatever remains of your life to genuine Dharma practice. So this is the outcome we're wanting to come to in the meditation. We start by reflecting others, then onto ourselves and back into past lives, and seeing that how we have continued in this way, and this is why we remain bound in samsara, leading to a sense of fatigue at this continued circling, leading us to make a promise to ourselves to from now commit to living a life of meaning, to cultivating minds of Dharma and keeping them ever present in our minds.
This
string of meditations that we've been looking at again tonight and over the last months brings us to the point where we have an appreciation for the preciousness of this rebirth and what can be achieved. So we're sitting here in our meditation with an understanding that we have the suitable basis to live a life of great meaning, a life where we can spiritually progress, we can study teachings, receive teachings, and meditate on them effectively, transforming our way of thinking in this way spiritually progress. So we have that appreciation, and now in this section we see the impermanent nature of this opportunity. So in this meditation that's been described tonight, one is reflecting on how much time in this life has already passed. And as we saw last week and the week before, and if in those meditations that would have been doing over these last couple of weeks, this life will certainly end. It is definite that it will end, and it could end at any time. When our life will end is completely uncertain. So how much of this life remains is uncertain. But a lot of time has passed. This we know. So furthermore, what we're doing in this meditation is we're taking an honest and a realistic look at our life thus far. And for all of us, there was a period of time, for some quite long, before one met the Dharma. And even having met the Dharma, there was a lengthy period of time before the Dharma had a great impact on one's mind. And in that period, for sure, one's way of thinking would have been dominated by achieving worldly happiness, overcoming worldly problems, and thereby one would have accumulated so much negativity, whether it's through killing insects, arguing with loved ones, arguing with those one doesn't like, having a strong attachment and desire, being jealous, all of this behavior that would have been considered normal in society, that too would have played a large part in our way of thinking, and thereby we would have accumulated a lot of non-virtue. So in the meditation that we are doing here, the point we're coming to is we've come to this clear understanding that we need to change how we live our life through changing our way of thinking. And the way the outcome to come to is an understanding that I need to keep my mind on virtue and thereby accumulate a positive karma as well as purify previously accumulated non-virtue. But to merely come to this understanding in meditation is insufficient, because that's an understanding that's very easy to come to based on just even hearing this presentation. But one needs to come to this reflection, through repeated meditation over a sustained period, because that then will have a transformative impact on our way of thinking. That then will serve to give us the sufficient strength of mind that when we see our mind is going in a non-virtuous direction, we pull it back to virtue because we want to accumulate virtue and purify negativities. So therefore, it's imperative that we cultivate what we have here in the text, a genuine Dharma practice, which refers to a mind that is always placed on virtue, a mind that's always placed on the Dharma. The paragraph then ends with, "Do this from today onward, not from tomorrow, for death may strike tonight." This is a conclusion that one comes to in this meditation. And it's imperative that we engage in this meditation repeatedly so that this arises within us in a transformative way. Because we need to overcome the strong habituation that has led us to prioritize all these worldly activities that dominate our mental energy. we need to turn away from this, we need to abandon this way of thinking that leads us to easily be deceived by the thought that my life is impermanent, it will end, I need to accumulate virtue, but right now I'm a little busy. Right now I have these tasks which have to be accomplished, they are of great importance. This mistaken way of thinking needs to be overcome. We need to apply our minds to the Dharma from now. Because as it says here, we need to do this from today onwards, not from tomorrow, for death may strike tonight. Taking in what you heard tonight and then in the previous 2 weeks on this topic, see how this has developed to this point where we spoke previously about how this precious life will end, that our death is certain. All of the powerful people in the past, all of the greatly intelligent, all of those who have done phenomenal things with their lives, they've all died, and so too will we. And it's not only that our death is certain, but our time of death too is uncertain. There are very few causes for sustaining our life, but there are so many that can bring it to an abrupt end. And through engaging in those two reflections repeatedly brings us to this point here of where our mind turns towards the Dharma. Because it's those two reflections that cut off our attraction to transient and meaningless activities, causes our mind to turn towards the Dharma with a sense of urgency and a sense of purpose. This then is the outcome that we're striving to get to in this meditation, to give our mind a sense, a great strength to apply ourselves to virtue, a great strength to break non-virtuous ways of thinking, non-virtuous habitual ways of thinking, and develop virtuous habitual ways of thinking.
And
When one comes to this conclusion in one's meditation, this conclusion that from now it's imperative that I live a life of great meaning, and one has the correct understanding that that means that one needs to have one's mind applied to the Dharma, one's mind on mind virtuous at all times, whatever one's doing, and when one's mind goes into in a negative direction, a harmful direction, that one is skillful and brings one's mind back to virtue. So having come to this conclusion, one will also have some doubt about to apply myself to the Dharma does mean engaging in some difficulties. For example, not everyone in society accepts what I do. Some people will criticize what I do. Some people will put me down, talk badly about me. Also, if I'm putting much more energy into, for example, receiving teachings and reflecting on these or doing retreats, then I'm going to have less time to earn a lot of money and be surrounded by material comfort. So one may well have some thoughts like this, and it's good to have these thoughts, it's good to have the doubts, and then to think through them. Because this then brings us to the varying types of patience that need to be practiced. So the practice of patience is a mind that stays undisturbed in the face of adversity. So generally speaking, there are three sources that the adversity comes from. The one that we're most familiar with is the difficult circumstances that arise in our encounters with others. And there one needs, with the practice of patience, is one's mind remaining spacious and calm and peaceful despite how others are relating to one, and thereby enabling one to be skillful in one's response. The second source is to do with one's own inner turmoil, and not then being deceived by or overcome by one's own inner turmoil. So the first is to do with outer, the second is to do with one's own way of thinking and being skillful with that. And the third is applying patience in our Dharma practice. So when we're encountering obstacles and difficulties in our Dharma practice, keeping a mind that is undisturbed in the face of that adversity, and thereby not being overwhelmed. So the result of the practice of patience is that one does not become overwhelmed by adverse circumstances, whether from others, from within oneself, or whilst engaging in the Dharma. So this is something that we then need to reflect on, because these are obstacles we will continue to engage in. So the first is the patience of disregarding harm from others, keeping our mind undisturbed and peaceful. The second is patience of willingly accepting suffering. So this is the inner turmoil. when we are having a difficulty, and then being patient with that. In other words, not being overwhelmed by that. And the third type of patience, again, then, is that of where one has, through a conviction in the Dharma, one's mind remains spacious and calm. In other words, whatever obstacles one needs to endure for one's Dharma practice, one does so with ease. So, for example, if one is studying or meditating and one's a little bit hungry, it's just some suffering that's arising. It's not so much. Keep on the practice, and later, when your session is complete, then solve that problem. But don't be too easily swayed or disturbed by mundane problems. So here one then comes to the reflection on patience in terms of the three sources of potential mental disturbance. In this meditation, when one comes to the conclusion of the meditation, which is that from now on, whatever remains of this life, I will ensure I engage in Dharma practice. And here, bearing in mind that the literal meaning of the word practice is to gain experience of. So in other words, I will spend the rest of this life gaining experience of the Dharma. When one comes to this conclusion in the meditation, then engage in the meditation on patience in relation to whatever outer obstacles one encounters as well as inner obstacles one encounters. Through the strength of mind that one has developed in this meditation, first on the preciousness of this life and then on its impermanence of this life, one is now developing a heroic way of thinking. And this heroic way of thinking, this great inner strength of mind, we need to apply to the problems and difficulties that we experience. We use our wisdom and we reflect that I will experience problems. For this we can be sure, because I have a lot of experience of experiencing problems. Throughout this life and previous lives, problems have rained down upon me. So now that I've done this meditation well, I can say with certainty my problems have not and will not disappear. They will come again. But what is going to be different this time is I'm going to be skilled in how I deal with them. So through changing my focus of my life, whatever obstacles I encounter, for example, I may have a little less wealth, some friendships that I'd, or some acquaintances that I'd maintained, maybe I will lose. But these are all minor. I am now going to rather be focused on a greater goal. I'm rather going to be focused on becoming a being that can be of great benefit to others. And if I experience problems, or when I experience problems, I'll look at that in a more realistic, realistic manner, so as not to be overwhelmed by them. When I'm a little bit hungry, compared to the suffering of others, especially those in the lower realms, the suffering of hunger is nothing compared to what many spirits experience. And for example, and furthermore, so whatever problems then I encounter, now with the strength of mind, I'm going to use this to ensure that I'm not overwhelmed by these problems. Because if I'm overwhelmed by them, I will not be able to continue my Dharma practice, because my mind will be taken from virtue to suffering, to non-virtue. So therefore, I'm rather going to respond to difficulties in a heroic manner, in a skilled manner, seeing that the practice of patience is the most skillful way of dealing with problems. A further step in the meditation, which is also important, because we're developing a strength of mind, and to enable us to spiritually progress rapidly, one needs strength of mind. Having reflected on patience, then one rejoices in one's spiritual accomplishment, rejoices in the virtue that has been accumulated in this meditation, rejoice in the strengthening of one's virtuous mind, rejoice in the virtue that has previously been accumulated. And all this is done so as to add ever more strength to our mind. the meditation on patience and then the strengthening of the mind through rejoicing. This we can see as we can do this in a way that's a preliminary for our day ahead, because for sure we will encounter problems, whether from others, whether from our own inner turmoil, or in our engaging in the Dharma. So what we're trying to do at this, with this stage of the meditation, is take this inner strength and form it like armor around us, to give us the great strength to have skill in dealing with life's difficulties and relating to the difficult experiences or interactions that we'll have with others or with our own inner turmoil, so as not to be overwhelmed, but rather to be able to be skillful. We can do this then in our meditation, perhaps if we look at what lies ahead of us in that day, what situations we'll encounter, and role play what we may well encounter, and think of how to be skillful about it, how to ensure our mind stays undisturbed and virtuous, and how we can be of benefit in those situations. In this way, we're using the strength of mind so that later in the day, when we do encounter difficult circumstances, that we can be skilled with that, whether it's with an individual or whether we know that we have a habitual way of thinking that is harmful, perhaps a lot of criticism and so forth. We can prepare ourselves so that when we see we encounter such a situation, then we can apply our training in meditation, transform that situation. So here we can. I'm reminded of a verse from Shantideva where he talks in the chapter on patience about how if the world is covered by thorns, that wherever someone walks, they will experience tremendous pain. So they have an option to try and sweep the entire world, but that really is ineffective. The easiest method is just to wear shoes, and they will experience then no discomfort, no unease at all. And that here refers to the practice of patience. Through the consistent cultivation of these virtuous minds, whatever difficult circumstance one encounters, one can remain spacious and calm and deal with the situation effectively and beneficially. So this too can be incorporated in this meditation.
What has just been presented then is an illustration of how through preparing well in our meditation we have the basis that throughout the day we keep our mind on the Dharma. Throughout the day we engage in Dharma practice. Because then whatever we're engaging in, our mind has been kept on virtue, kept away from the afflictions, kept on virtue. So this then is an illustration on how to take our Dharma practice into our daily life, and ensure that the minds of the Dharma remain dominant
throughout our day. And returning then explicitly to the text, you may ask, if with the exception of Dharma, nothing helps at the time of death, then how does Dharma help? Well, in brief, in the context that we're looking at here, we've come to see the preciousness of this life and its impermanence. We then know that this precious opportunity will end, and it doesn't end in oblivion. Rebirth follows. And whether that rebirth is another pleasant rebirth like we've achieved now, or a suffering rebirth in the lower realms, depends on the strength of the virtue or non-virtue on our continuum. Therefore, it's imperative for our own happiness and our own ability to be of benefit to others that we use what remains of this life well. We use it to accumulate virtue and ensure that we create ever stronger causes for not just mere happiness, but for our spiritual progression and our spiritual development, so that we can be of an ever greater benefit to others. And the paragraph concludes, and how does non-dharma harm? The two questions were, how does dharma help, and how does non-dharma harm? The answer comes now in the final paragraph on the 19th page. At death, we do not simply evaporate. This is quite clear from what has been said before. This life will end. And when it ends, one immediately takes rebirth again. And that rebirth can only be one of two directions: a pleasant migration such as we've achieved now, or a suffering migration. It's only those two options. And that is dependent on how this life has been lived. And
ཁྱི ཕྱད མི ཁྱི ཉམས་ལས་ཡག་པོ་ཆེ་མ་དུ་བ་ནི་ཞན་ལས་ཕན་པ་ཆེ་ཆེ་ཐུ་སམ་རེ་དེ་ཡིན་ཟ་རང་ཉིད་གི་ཉམས་ལས་ཡག་པོ་ཡོང་གུ་དུ་དེ་ཉམས་ལས་ཡག་པོ་ཡོང་རེ་ལ་ཐ་ད་མི་གོ་བ་དེན་ཆ་པ་ཆེ་མ་ཐོབ་ན་ཨ་ནི་དེ་ནི་ཡིན་ཟ་ཉམས་ལས་ཡག་པོ་ཆེ་ཐུ་སམ་རེ་དེ་ཡིན་ཟ་ཉམས་ལས་སོ་སོ་ཐ་པ་དང་ཐམ་ཅེ་ཁེན་པེ་ཐོབ་གི་ཉམས་ལས་འཇ Sanyi, and the Tabachim, which Yam Nanjin, San Yokoma Toyagi, Dandala, and the Din Tabachin, Tana Kiwachimatala Mikova Toba Chigis, Dilan Dingi, that Dinis and Dinigi Tobachi, Gudini, Dirinapa Chigis, Dirinapa Yam Chigis, and this same Shuki. That Dirinapa Yam Chia de Garrison, Surim Soy, Chisanga Jugi, Luna Yusum Yukone, Yashogan Yalan, Dirin, Luna Yusum Yukone, Shan, Nubi Chawas, and Saw Nichi, same big, and Jugi, Jayatan, and Jugi Rabjuin, and Jugi Sanyiki, Jeba, and Sun Shiba Chesna, who soon to a chicken, some beer, some diada, Tishakurwa, and then Denegi soon, and the Nigi don't be sent by Jimbe in Yamneka, me Luma Yusum, Skiwata Chiba Chasan, Shan, and Pember, Duma. Say at the digitum like Dangi, Sambi, some time to me, the Senna Chigme, Senna, Senna Chigme, Senna Chigme, Senna Majiba, Chata, Dangi, and Sambi, some time to Senna Chigme, somebody to him, the idea, Sumi Samba, Senna Sungor, Sumi Samba, Sudan, or Sudan Mabuya, Jim Mabore, Sena, Sudan, Jimbe Dangi, Sibi, Shula, and Senna Chigme, Sambi, some legal, Sudan legal. Sena Sibi, and then Chigi said to Dangi. で、就是把希望呢,先去那把機,所以說剛剛去你們的家,你隨便你們的去,什麼什麼的,真真先呀,你怕困了,捐的,怕捐去去也給怕,卡的去也給什麼的送過了,隨便你們我送你們的,你個來,先來那把機啊,你卡的去也什麼送過了,就是的,出面的有的,送什麼的有的,我說說把車過了,你去了出面的有的,那這個準備
Nyamne chida ta kiwi chawa ni pe kuta pa ta pe apura dini chaya ni apura shi tsuri kashin tushin wani nyamne chigi se cheyo du dini ki samtang yu du shu la kharsa lelo sungo ro lelo ki chukumese lelo sungo ro tsuri me di gore tsuri nyamne chidi di li gore tsa ta dini chenang anju ki du chini nyimre dini samtang ane telia ane chingang anju ki kunwa di chashu semna ane jam nye che chakurwa ni para dili dini ki kishu dhubi samtang ki tangila di para dini ki nye semjian dini ki nyamne chaya di semjian tamji di ki dhubi ya dudunga seka chile yin aasam semjian tamji ki dhunda sanyo tobi chile yin sam dini ki samtang para para dini ki samtang wana nga su ane kiawa di lap chimbo chaya ta ye chimbo chakur da nga su nyamne chaya di ta je mangu shena ama shena lakhlan ta ngosu lak
Dishiwa,
It's quite a bit. I just need to remind myself where we started. Yeah, that's our time together tonight has now come to an end. This too is impermanent. And now we come to the final part, which is where we summarize what we looked at tonight. So we often talk about living a life of meaning or living a meaningful life. And what that means in essence, or in its briefest form, is that whatever we do, we do through having a mind that is placed on the various topics of the Dharma. In other words, where the various minds of the Dharma are present and dominant within one, and thereby one engages in one's varying activities. And this is a life of the Dharma, a mind, a life lived in harmony with the Dharma. So the trainings that we've been looking at now for some time in these 19 pages are about developing a great strength of mind, which comes about through refocusing our attention, through changing what we value, what we hold as important. We've looked at a number of different topics. Most recently, or a little while ago, we looked at the precious human rebirth. And there we came to see why this life, this human life we have, is precious. And we looked at this from a variety of aspects, and through having gone through those meditations, one will have come to a point of valuing this opportunity that we have achieved. And that ties in directly then with the topic of that we're looking at now, the impermanence of this opportunity. This class is impermanent. Our opportunity to cultivate our knowledge of the Dharma and reflect on it is impermanent. This very life will end. And we need to, in this topic that we're now at the third week of, gain that great certainty that this life will end. And gaining certainty of this means it has an impact on our way of thinking. And this then gets conjoined with the understanding that the time of our death, that is uncertain. And these two need to be brought about together, and brought about in a way that completely that has an overwhelming impact on us. Because through these reflections we've been doing thus far, our priorities, our values will have been affected. Now, with this meditation, we're adding great strength to this, and the strength is needed because whatever our Dharma goals are, to achieve them, one needs strength of mind. If one is a practitioner focusing on a good rebirth, one can't be lost in the joys and distraction of this life, and then every now and then give rise to the thought of, I need to accumulate virtue for next life. That way of thinking is too weak. Let alone if one's thinking about attaining liberation from suffering in its entirety, or if one has the aspiration to become a bodhisattva, who wants to have the skill to lead all beings to develop their own enlightenment, attain their own enlightenment. To actually become a bodhisattva, one needs great strength of mind, and to have such strength of mind, one needs to value this life, seeing that this opportunity we have is precious, and we need to continue achieving them, and we need to ensure we accumulate those causes now. So to have such strength of mind requires effective reflection on these topics. Hence, it's something that has been looked at in great depth, so as to give everyone time to cultivate these within oneself and develop some experience of this before moving on. Hopefully then what is becoming clearer is it's through these meditations done repeatedly over a sustained period, we start to change our values and our perspective and add strength to this mind. And this strength comes about with a new conviction. And with this understanding of what a meaningful life is and how to live it, then our mind naturally turns towards what is important, what we value, the Dharma. Here with this strength of mind then, we are then ready to come down to what is, if we take this vast array of Buddhist teachings and condense them, they come down to the six trainings of the six practices of ethical conduct, generosity, patience, joyous perseverance, concentration and wisdom on the basis of love and compassion. To engage in those meditations with this basis of reflect on the precious human rebirth and the impermanence of this life, we then have strength of mind that we can develop these minds of ethics and so forth in a very powerful way. Because when we've valued this life that we have, we will want to accumulate the causes, and the main cause is having an ethical outlook, having this commitment that I will not harm others. This is it. It's a mind, an attitude that commits to not harming others through our behavior and our way of thinking. And with the understanding of impermanence, we know I have to develop this mind and be vigilant that this mind stays present and I don't come to an unethical way of thinking, a way of thinking that brings harm to others. So through effectively meditating on the preciousness of our life and the impermanence of it, an ethical outlook, this commitment not to harm, naturally arises within us, and with the strength of mind to make this ever stronger. And furthermore, those who are ordained, and those also who are non-ordained but who have vows, will be very clear that these vows need to be guarded. These vows are of great value, are precious, because it's through guarding them well, I continue to create the causes to ensure I have a good rebirth and can continue my spiritual development and be of ever greater benefit to others. And through our changing of priorities, our re-evaluation of what is meaningful in our life, we change our attitude towards our resources. We develop a mind of abandonment, a mind of renunciation, where we're turning away from worldly things, mundane things. And we start to relate to our possessions in a different way, seeing that our attachment to them binds us in suffering. Rather, if we relate to them as a cause of joy and happiness for others, they become a source of liberation for myself and others. With such an attitude, we don't get so tied up in desire And we naturally get drawn towards the mind of generosity and away from the mind of miserliness. So with mind of miserliness, to understand it correctly, overcoming the mind of miserliness is actually a practice of ethical conduct. Because the ethical conduct is a mind of God, where we guard ourselves from non-virtue. Miserliness is a selfish mind, a non-virtuous mind. Generosity is the wish to give, the wish to help, the wish to be of benefit to others, not only through material assistance, but assisting through our skills and our talents and whatever abilities we have to help others with their burden of suffering, to help others achieve lasting happiness. So this wish to give to others, then this comes about in dependence on a powerful mind, a strong mind, and that strength of mind comes about through these reflections here on death and impermanence and a precious human rebirth. And when, as these two minds of ethics and generosity grow ever stronger within us, this wish not to harm, this wish to be of benefit, that practice of patience we heard about tonight, this comes about with ever greater ease. Because when we're faced with adversity, whether from inner turmoil or from others or in our Dharma practice, wanting to be of benefit to others, not wanting to harm others, will keep our mind spacious, will protect us from engaging in a way that brings harm. Responding to others in a harmful way, or being overwhelmed by our inner turmoil or obstacles to Dharma practice. So therefore, our mind, our practice of patience, the development of this mind that stays undisturbed in the face of adversity, comes about in dependence on the growing strength of ethics and generosity. And ethics and generosity come about in dependence on the strength of mind that's cultivated here in precious human rebirth and the reflection on the impermanence of this life. And the fourth practice, that of joyous perseverance, this is naturally arising through all of these meditations. As we see ever greater change in our way of thinking, we start to see how we are no longer disturbed by the world around us, but our mind is more peaceful, less distracted, more joyous. And we're seeing that we are able to have a calming and a beneficial influence on the lives of others. This leads to joy within us, and it leads to the wish to want to persevere in receiving teachings, in meditating on those teachings. And then, with this basis, the other reflections on concentration and wisdom also will come about so much more easily. And then all of these practices, when they are done on a basis of love and compassion, they have such great power. Because then our mind is so much more expansive. Because we are in persevering through difficulties, not just for ourselves, but for all others. And this too adds ever greater strength and power to our mind. And then when we faced with life's hardships and life's difficulties and pain, we see it in a different perspective and we can transform it with ever greater ease. And that too adds to our inner joy and our inner strength. So this is a heroic way to deal with life. And it comes about in dependence on these very meditations that we've been looking at for some time now. And through receiving these teachings, one goes through them in the class, goes through that process of reflection on these teachings. And doing that then at home brings about a development of a strengthening of these virtuous minds, habituation to this way of thinking. And as this habituation grows, first through receiving the teachings, secondly on our meditation chair or cushion, it then starts to have an impact in our everyday life. And we start to see how we interact with others and with difficulties in a very different way. And that inspires us to make ever greater effort. In this way, our non-virtuous ways of thinking, these weaken. Our virtuous ways of thinking, these grow and develop. And this is how one lives a life of meaning. This is how one integrates the Dharma in our everyday life. This is how we experience happiness now and create the causes for greater happiness in our future lives. This is how we have a meaningful impact on others right now, and an ever greater meaning, more meaningful impact in our future lives too.
All right,
So next week we'll continue from here, and we'll talk. Continue to look at how Dharma helps and non-Dharma only harms. Now tonight, when you come to dedicate, we've had a request for dedication to be made especially for Hong Kong. So I get a bit emotional sometimes; it gets a little hard. Anyway, so bear with me. I'll try and repeat what Genda said, but it'll be a little abbreviated. There were some students trapped in Hong Kong who we just dedicate for Hong Kong, and I leave it at that, okay. Thank you.